Good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High in studio, and with me today for Greenside Up, we have Jacob Weber and James Coover. Gentlemen, how are you doing this morning?
Pretty good.
Very well. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice cold morning. And speaking of cold, James, you wanted to talk about the cold weather.
Jacob?
Okay. Not James. Sorry, Jacob. Sorry. Two James.
Okay.
Jacob.
We're going to get started this morning, right? We get the brain plugged in, and here we go.
Yeah. Okay. I had a little brain fart there, so.
Okay. All right. Well, certainly, cold weather and cold temperatures, and we think about strawberry plants, and they're out in the garden there, and it's about time to think about mulching. Usually, in normal years, no, this is a normal year. Abnormal weather is normal for this area.
Exactly.
So, yeah, well, I got it backwards because when we have average weather, that's abnormal.
Yeah, that's very true around here.
Okay, so we're starting off confused. Mulching strawberries is beneficial because it protects the crown of the plant. And the crown of the plant's very important on strawberries this time of the year because next year's crop is already in that crown. The flower buds have formed. And so we want to protect that crown really deep in the plant right now. This cold snap probably didn't do much of any damage to the crown, but what it did was it set those plants into good dormancy. Those plants are now ready to go into the winter fully dormant. One of the things we don't want to do is mulch the plants before they're dormant, because then they will continue to grow and then you will have some damage when it really gets cold during the winter months. So we've had that exposure to the cold temperatures, set those plants into dormancy. Now we can put a light mulch over the plants. You don't have to do it yet, but it's a good idea to be thinking about it. I'm thinking about it. I have strawberry plants and I want to put a mulch on them. I like to use prairie hay as a mulch. It's a nice light mulch, but it's enough that it doesn't smother the plants. That's real important. When we mulch the plants for the winter time, we want to make sure that you can still see part of the plant through the surface of the mulch. If you put it on too thick, then you smother the plant, and then we start getting some issues such as snow mold and other problems that creep in, and we probably lose some of the plants over the winter time, or maybe have some significant damage. So the mulch that goes on is light. What we're trying to do is just hold the heat of the earth in around that crown of that plant and protect those flower buds. And that also slows the plant down the following spring when the temperatures, day length increases, the temperatures start to increase a little bit, but it keeps the ground cooler and actually keeps the plants from initiating growth in the spring for maybe a week or two, delays that early growth and maybe delay flower formation, flower opening, so that we may miss those late cold snaps that come in and potentially ruin a strawberry crop. It doesn't work every year, but it helps. But certainly now's the time to be thinking about mulching the strawberry plants.
So, yeah, that'd be a good thing because definitely want those strawberries. Well, James, wanted to come over to you for just a few minutes. You have a couple of things you want to talk. You want to talk about canola to begin with.
Yeah, and so canola, I mean, it's kind of too late to plant it now. It's kind of, you know, it's cold weather too, but so canola is really, it's an alternative for wheat in a way, but it's completely different. The only similarity between the two is that they both grow during the winter. It's a winter crop. However, besides that, there's not a whole lot that's the same. And that's the advantages of it. One of the reasons for having canola in a rotation is that it, because of its differences, its weed preferences or its weed issues are completely different. So maybe if you have an issue with ryegrass or a lot of the other grasses that are hard to treat out of wheat because they're both grasses, Well, with a broadleaf like canola, that's a different issue. It's a lot easier to treat that stuff. But of course, canola being so completely different, it has a lot of things that you need to do to mess with canola. The same equipment can be used, which is a huge advantage, because if you're going to grow something, you know, you can't really afford to buy $500,000 combine that's completely different, or, you know, even headers are incredibly expensive. So you can use the same equipment. Canola seed, however, is much smaller. I mean, it's like a big radish seed. It is very small. It's like, yeah, it could fall straight through stuff if you don't have stuff tightened up. And over time, the seed has gotten bigger, but still it's way smaller than wheat. I mean, it's probably smaller than Milo even. So it's really is like a big radish.
Yeah,
seed.
That's pretty small. So.
Yeah, it's hard to mess with because of that. Typically the yields in canola are around 40 to 50 bushels, which doesn't seem like a lot, because when you're comparing it to wheat, wheat's gonna have a much higher bushel. The thing is that canola is an oil crop. It's, you know, much higher protein. There's all sorts of components to it that there's no possible way that you can have the two. It's much more comparable to soybeans if you're looking at the yields, because they're both oil crops.
Right.
And in the food industry, we actually use canola, very similar between the two. You know, when you go to the grocery store, you see it on the on the shelf.
Canola
there.
Oil.
Yeah, canola oil right next to the soybean oil.
Exactly.
Or vegetable oil, what we call it. But canola, unlike soybeans, we do need to fertilize it. Like wheat actually probably needs a little more fertility than the wheat does. Some of the issues with the small seed size is that it's hard to get planted and hard to get even. But actually, a lot of the newer seeders do a lot better with that. The air seeders, those, I don't know, they're great big complicated machines. I'm not exactly sure how they work, but those air seeders do a really good job of getting that seed there in the right placement. Brilliant seeders are kind of, they're older seeders that actually do a pretty good job. They basically, anything that does a really good cover crop is the same stuff that will do pretty good with canola, because the seed size is about the same. Usually cover crops are much smaller seed, like, you know, there's sometimes canola in cover crops. Not long ago, canola, another issue with it that it had an issue with bolting. Basically, we wanted to bolt after the last frost, but it would bolt too early. And then sometimes here in Kansas, especially Southeast Kansas, we get a late frost.
Right.
That everything, you know, the daffodils are going and the late frost kind of whacks them. The same thing can happen with canola. Our genetics are kind of improving a little bit, so they can hold off a little bit longer. Another thing that's an issue is the shattering. Basically, it makes the seeds, and naturally the pod will open, the seeds will come out, but we want that to stay put when we're harvesting. And so it's kind of an issue, but we're getting that improved with genetics as well. Usually other parts of the state have an issue with dry weather in the fall, but because of our bimobile weather pattern, usually have more rain in the fall than anywhere else in the state. So as far as that is concerned, we probably are better suited to growing canola, at least getting it started, which is an issue for other places. We'll also probably have less winter kill. And so canola is not as tough as wheat as surviving our cold winters, but that canola probably can survive a little bit better here because we're more mild. So the input cost with canola is greater than wheat, but the yields are, of course, a little lower too, but the price difference per bushel is much higher. And so because it's an oil crop, it sells on a different market, we can actually get a kind of a premium for it. Right now, the markets aren't so great with no matter what we're selling.
Right.
So same thing with canola, the markets really aren't great right now. Usually, though, canola can actually have a better profitability than wheat. The only issue around here is that we really don't have anywhere to go with it. And because we don't have canola, it's hard to get into canola, because you
right.
got to haul it all the way to somewhere in central Kansas to sell the stuff. So it's one of those things, if we can get it going around here, well then more of the cooperatives and the green elevators will start to carry, or at least have a bin available to put that stuff into.
Because you're profits getting dented by having to drive all the way to central Kansas. Because so basically it's almost balancing out as if you were growing wheat, because there's lots of wheat around here, but not any canola places.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, wheat almost makes no money whatsoever anymore.
Right.
And so that's one of the things about, if you could just have some profit with canola, it really does look better on paper. And so, but there's, it's one of those things, since it's a brand new crop, well, it's not brand new, it's actually really old, but because we don't have it around here as a new crop for us, the transition to it is rather slow. And so it takes some time for people to get used to it. But you drive out to central Kansas and you have those beautiful fields of yellow, and you know, you'll have people driving by taking pictures in there, of course, and all that other stuff. But it's kind of a really cool crop. I don't know. It's neat to see. So
yeah, that I've seen those fields before. It's just like just a field of gold, and
yeah,
just like,
yeah,
wow, that's beautiful. And you realize that's canola. So All right. Well, James, you said there's a few programs going on that you also wanted to talk about.
Yeah. So the reason why I was talking about canola is because on December the 17th, we're going to have something called Agronomy Night. It's yearly. We've been doing it forever, even before the district was formed. It'll be in Independence in the evening, and we'll have the canola breeder from K-State coming down and talking about canola. I'm hoping to have a couple other speakers, some new specialists here, but that'll be on December 17th at the ICC West Community Center there here in Independence. Another program we have even sooner is the Farm Succession and Tax Control. I kind of talked about it last time.
Right.
We're going to talk about wills and grants and estates and other trust and such things. That will be on November the 21st at the Parsons Research Center. And that will be in the evening from about 5:45 to 8 o'clock. So if you're interested in Farm Succession and all the legal aspects to it, that's a really great program to come to. We're going to cover a lot of stuff to get people started. We also have the deer program, which is the sort of a hunter safety. We're going to do some field dressing. It's if we can get a deer. and do a lot of other fun stuff on that program. They'll be on December the 3rd from 5 to 8, also at the Research Center there in Parsons. So if you're a hunter around and you want to get excited about the rifle season coming up on December the 4th, come to this the evening before and learn some stuff. There's a lot of other programs we have in January and February. We got a corn school January the 8th. Women in Ag are some of the Wednesdays in January and February. We're thinking about having a lambing and what do you call a baby sheep, baby goat? Kidding. Yeah, that's it. Kids and lambs. We'll have that school. And so we just have a lot going on here. So
yeah, a lot going on. And about that deer program, deer are very plentiful around this time of year because they did a study last year that 17% of accidents in Kansas were car deer accidents. So it's like those things, they'll jump out of nowhere and you're just like, what was that? You don't even have time to react on it. So, But again, that deer program, he says, taking place in Parsons. It's coming up pretty soon.
Yep. December the 3rd there in Parsons.
All right. So again, lots of good things going on. We're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll have Fox News, and then we will have more from the guys from Green Side Up. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Welcome back to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High in studio with you, and it's now time to restart Green Side Up as we have James Coover and Jacob Weber in studio. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. So, Jacob, we were kind of talking off air, which you wanted to talk about here, and you, one of the first things you wanted to talk about was garden cleanup.
Yeah, it's that time of the year. Garden's done. Okay. We're not getting any more crop off the garden unless you have one of those hoop houses, I guess, and you got it heated because the temperatures got cold enough that took care of everything, even inside of an unheated green hoop house, because they can only protect temperatures for about 4 or 5 degrees, and then it kind of, the tender crops are gone. the hardy crops, such as lettuce, young lettuce could tolerate it, maybe some colder temperatures. The cold crops, cabbage, kale, very tolerant of, kale is very tolerant of cold temperatures. But it's that time of the year, day length is significantly shorter, light intensity is significantly less. So the driving force for plant production is pretty much at a, getting down to the bottom of the barrel. So it's time to clean up the mess. And cleaning up the mess is very important because some of the problems that we have in the garden, disease and insect issues, can be associated with dirty housekeeping. Leaving leftover plants out in the garden for insects to feed on, continue to feed on, or disease organisms to overwinter. A lot of disease organisms that overwinter on plant debris. They have to have a substrate to exist on. If that substrate is destroyed, then that organism is not going to be able to survive. Of course, sanitation is only as good as your neighbor's ability to clean up their garden too, because instead of being, your garden's clean, but you're only 50 feet away from another garden that may be contaminated or have debris left in it. So everybody, clean up your garden. At least get the crop debris cleaned up. Get rid of it. Burning is a good way of destroying crop debris. It's not necessarily the best way, but it's one way of cleaning up the mess. Chopping up the material and putting it into a compost pile is another way of doing it. If it's heavily infected debris or infested debris, well, infested is a lot easier to work with, but infected debris, disease debris may be a little bit different issue. It may be better to burn it. But anyway, composting is a good way. But clean up the surface and then a good idea to work that soil, break it up, loosen it up, and possibly incorporate some of that surface debris into the ground itself so that come springtime that material is completely embedded in the soil where it can decompose. So this is a good idea. Clean up the garden, clean up the flower beds, perennial beds, remove the tops of the perennials plants and get those out of there. Burning is a good way of destroying the infected debris. Remove it and put it in a compost pile located away from the garden and flower beds. Flower beds sometimes benefit from a light layer of some type of mulch, such as chopped up leaves or coarse leaves such as oak leaves that don't mat down onto the bed itself. If they stay in place, the wind blows and things blow around. But we want to keep the mulch fairly light. 2 inches is sufficient. Beyond that, some plants that we may leave, perennial plants such as ornamental grasses that have a wintertime value where the grass is still has a nice appearance to it and adds some feature to the winter landscape from color, texture, and form that is very beneficial. Those perennial ornamental grasses that typically are clump forming, those would be taken care of the following February, early February, or maybe late January, or they'd be I'd probably go to mid-February before I cut them off, shear them back to appropriate height, depending on the type of grass plant it is. But beyond that, You're getting ready for the winter. Leaves are falling. Make sure you get the leaves raked off the lawn. Leaves that stay on the lawn and mat down in certain areas during winter time can increase the incidence of what we call snow molds. And snow molds can kill grass plants. And in those areas where the leaves are left on the lawn, probably the following spring, you'll have a bare area where the grass plants have died. So we want to make sure that we get the leaves off the lawn. Or if you want to, you can run over the lawn several times with a lawnmower that chops up the leaves so they break up and filter into the lawn instead of matting down on top of the grass. Well, those are some of the things you might consider doing this time of the year.
We are taking your calls right here on Green Side Up at 251-6909, 1-800-252-5443, 1-800-252-KGGF. If you have any questions for Jacob and James, we will definitely take your calls. Another thing you want to talk about, we talked about it a few weeks ago, but maybe just kind of a refresher since we're at that time of year, about compost.
Composting is a process of reducing the waste in the garden. Some gardeners compost, so they like that organic material to work back into the soil. But the main reason of composting is just to have a means of reducing the yard waste into and converting it into a usable, reusable form. It's that's recycling, and but it does require a little bit of patience and skill and a place to do the composting and some dedication. You don't have to be out there managing the compost pile every day. It takes care of itself. It's just a natural process of decomposition, and it's taken takes place in an environment that's suitable for decomposition. That means you have to have the material that's going to decompose, pull together. You have a suitable environment where you have adequate moisture in the material so that the microbes can work. A suitable temperature. We don't have that during the winter months. So composting, actually, active composting is going to take place during the summer months when we have warm temperatures. The combination of green and brown materials or carbon and nitrogen materials to where the microbes have adequate levels of nitrogen so they can work on the carbon materials and have more efficient breakdown of the material. And then adequate supply of oxygen, which is typically, you don't have to worry about that. It's going to occur. The only situation is where you have maybe a compost pile located in an area where it just stays saturated. That's not good because then we could start to get anaerobic decomposition, and it smells like sewage, and neighbors start to complain about that. But more than likely, that is a very unusual situation. Most of the time, your compost is going to be just fine. More than likely, the compost is not going to have a sufficient amount of moisture, so we kind of have to watch that. But this year was not an issue. We had rainfall sufficiently enough to take care of the needs for our compost pile.
We had plenty of that, that's for sure.
Yep. So, combination, creating a suitable environment, and then turning the material. The material on the outside doesn't decompose because it's the environment isn't suitable. The material on the inside decomposes. And what we want to do is turn the pile so that we work the stuff on the outside to the inside so it keeps the process going. It doesn't have to be done too often, but it is very beneficial to turn the pile several times during the season. Patience, it takes time to make good compost, usually a year or two. And then material, once it's decomposed, down to a point where it looks like maybe a peaty earth, then you can return it back to the garden, and usually it is fairly sanitary. Now, there may be some weed seeds in it, but it's usually fairly sanitary and usable on the lawn, in the flower beds, in the vegetable garden, and in the potting mixes. You can do that. Of course, potting mixes are going to be pasteurized before they're used, hopefully. Not necessarily, but hopefully, especially if you're starting seedlings, you definitely have to have pasteurized soil. So, okay.
Absolutely. And coming back to you, James, real quick, just in case somebody wasn't, or they're just tuning in, about a couple of programs that are going on around the K-State area, and also just a quick recap on canola as well, if you want to go back over that just real quick before somebody may just be now listening in.
Okay, yeah, so we have a lot of programs here, so hold on and listen up, because yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. The first one coming up very soon is November 21st, which is what, like a week and a little bit away?
Yeah.
It's not that long. Is our farm succession and tax control, where we're going to talk about wills and trust, estate planning for your family, or all sorts of legal aspects to farm succession. It's going to be a good program. We got some great people coming in. It'll be on November the 21st at the Parsons Research Center. And then a couple weeks later, 2 weeks after that, we'll have the preseason deer program for all you hunters out there. We'll be on December the 3rd in the evening, 5 to 8. Hopefully we'll do this field dressing demonstration a little bit before it gets dark. We'll have some lights out there, but we'll do some of that. And then after that, we'll go inside the research center there, and we'll have some great presentations over wildlife management, food plot preferences, hunting safety, deer habitat, and we're getting the game warden and wildlife specialist will be coming in. It's going to be a great program. 2 weeks after that is the agronomy night. So that'll be on December the 17th in Independence. We've had this thing for years and years. Farmers are used to coming to it. It's a big show because they've been doing it for a long time. And that's where we're going to talk about canola. Kind of a cool crop, new around here. Hopefully, I'll have one of the new specialists coming in and kind of introducing themselves as well. We'll see if that happens. But if not, we'll hear about canola, and you'll get dinner, free dinner and all that. So, you know, it'll be a good show. It is every year. Shortly after the break, on this January the 8th, we'll have our corn school, and the women in ag, the farm financial skills, will be covering balance sheets, income statements, cash flows, all sorts of stuff. That'll start on January the 15th. It'll be every Wednesday evening for 4 weeks. We'll have the lambing and kidding school, baby goats or kids, on February the 10th. And then we'll have a tame grass stalker field day on February the 20th. And those are just the ones that we currently have planned. So
There could be some more that pop up somewhere along the way.
we're going to be busy. There's all sorts of fun stuff to do. So before the break, I was kind of talking about canola and all of its coolness. But before... right now, if you haven't started to really look into canola, you're probably not going to plant canola now. So, really, there still could be some wheat planted at this point. It's getting kind of late. Soils are getting kind of cold. Questionable. But there's still some wheat out there that could be planted, because we're just now getting into some dry soil where we could actually get it in there. If you are considering still planting wheat, sometimes that is done this late in southeast Kansas, there are some things you need to look at. One is you have to increase the seeding rate because the tillering isn't going to be as high. You'll want to do about a quarter of a million more seeds per acre per week past October 25th. So at this point, what are we, 3 weeks past or close to that? So we're almost getting to the maximum quantity of seeds that you'll want to put per acre, which is around 2 million. So that's the maximum that you want. The reason why I'm getting you the number of seeds rather than the pounds is because seed size is so very different when it comes to wheat. You know, you have a great big old fat Everest berry, which is a whole lot bigger than a lot of the other dainty seeds. Your seeding rate is going to be a lot different. So we go by seeds per acre. Usually that translates, it doesn't really translate, but they say around 120 pounds to the acre. That's the rate that you don't want to go over. With the average variety, that's about 2 million pounds. Another thing you want to do is put a fungicide with your seed. The reason is because it takes so much longer for that seed to germinate in cold soils is that it has a longer time sitting there. It could get infected. and especially at its seedling stage. So there are some fungicides you can just kind of pour in with the seed and mix it up by hand, actually. So if you're doing your bin run, you could still use a fungicide. One thing, though, don't plant the seed more shallow. Some guys will try to plant it shallow because they think that maybe the warm day or two will get out of the ground. It doesn't work. You do not want to risk killing that seed in the middle of winter. Plant it at the normal depth, 1 to 1.5 inches. Not too deep, obviously, but just keep it normal when you're planting that seed. Besides that, really, you know, you kind of have to hope for the best this time of year planting wheat. Got to plant it thick. You can use a starter fertilizer. Phosphorus is the only starter fertilizer you should use, though. If you put nitrogen or potassium with it, those are salts that will kill that seed.
Right.
So you can put phosphorus directly with the seed, and that's the only one. And honestly, this time of year, that's the nutrient that has a hard time getting a hold of in the winter, and it's an important part of surviving the winter as well. So it's not very much, 20 pounds to the acre with the seed. You could actually kind of mix it in even. So that's a thing that you can do. They're not going to use all that much nitrogen this time of year. So really, it's kind of just hoping for the best, getting in the ground and hoping we'll have some warm days. And maybe the spring will be just the right weather to get that stuff, maybe a few more tillers to get a yield out of that. So
absolutely. But actually that's probably going to be about it, guys. I do thank you very much for coming again and again, and bringing a lot of information for you guys, and once again, thank you for coming in today, guys.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to be it for Green Side Up for this week. We will be back next week. Once again, let's see, we'll check the schedule. Next week it's going to be Jacob and Wendy. So thanks for giving me the schedule, by the way, instead of just saying Jacob and company. So
okay.
So anyway, thanks a lot, guys. We'll see you again next week.
All right, take care.
All right, you're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.
Good morning. I'm Tim Speck with your latest market information right here on the Mid-America Ag Network. Well, we're actually seeing some strength through the overnight trading as December corn now up a quarter cent at 373.5.